Here in Isaiah 21, we've got Isaiah giving a prophecy about the fall of Babylon. And you could understand Babylon here possibly as Assyria, but I think he's talking about Babylon. And yet when Isaiah gives it, he gets really upset for Babylon. Verse 2, a grievous vision is declared to me. He's talking in the first person. It's like he's saying, oh no, this is terrible. I've just seen something absolutely awful. Instead of saying, oh yeah, you know what, guys, I saw this big enemy of Judah, and they were getting totally destroyed in this vision that I saw. Isn't that cool, huh? He says, no, I saw something terrible. And when he talks about it, he says in verse 3, therefore my thighs are filled with anguish. Pains have taken hold on me like the pains of a woman in labor. I'm in so much pain that I can't hear. I'm so dismayed that I can't see. It's a bit like he's saying that I don't want to see the vision anymore. I don't want to hear any more of this vision. This is terribly painful for me. Goes on, verse 4. My heart flutters. Horror has frightened me. The night of my pleasure, or the evening of my pleasure, has been turned into trembling for me. Wait a minute. Who is this talking? Because it sounds like this is talking about Belshazzar, who was dethroned by Darius on the night of his pleasure, on the evening of his pleasure. You remember, it's probably his birthday celebration. There he is getting drunk, having a great time, and the forces of Darius come and overtake his kingdom. So who's talking? Well, it sort of sounds like it's Belshazzar, but in the context, it's clearly Isaiah. Isaiah has so identified with the king of Babylon that he feels as if he is that man. He's so pained that this is going to happen. Even though, in fact, this was about 200 years in the future. So he is absolutely identified with the people that he's prophesying against. Now, we've had the same with him in chapters 15 and 16, where he gives a prophecy about Moab, but about how the Moabites are going to cry out in pain, and then he interrupts the prophecy and says, oh, my heart cries out for Moab. And now he's saying the same about Babylon. Now, he clearly identifies then with the people he's prophesying against. And I think in that he reflects the mind and the heart of God, who takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked. And for all time, it is outlawed for the believer to rejoice in that sense at the suffering of anyone who's under judgment. This is a pain for God, and so it was, really, for Isaiah. If you have any sense of the value and the meaning of the human person, anyone's death, you know, diminishes me in that sense. And so it's on the basis of that desperate identity with the people around us who likewise are marching to an eternal grave, that you will therefore identify with them and get out and witness to them. When we complain about, oh, you know, I don't seem to have the motivation for evangelism to get out there and preach the gospel and change the course of conversation with secular people so that I can talk to them about Jesus, I think part of it is because we're so locked up in ourselves and we don't see the tragedy, we don't see the pain of what is going to come upon them. Because there is a day of judgment coming upon this world very soon, it seems. But even if not, all the same, these people are walking to an eternal grave. And the tragedy of that should not at all be missed by us. So, as I say, if you have any sense for humanity, any feeling for the value of the human person, and the tragedy, really, of human death, unconsciousness as it is, no immortal soul, then you are going to get out there and plead with people and get over your natural inhibitions and worries about your image and all that kind of stuff. And simply your heart will bleed for them. And it's that ability to identify with condemned sinners, which I think came to its full term in the Lord's death on the cross, that there he who was perfect identified with us. In that sense, you could say that he had our sinful flesh, not that he was a sinner. But what the law could not do, in that it was weak through the flesh, God dealt with through Jesus being identified with sinful behaviour and sinful people in the way that he was, not by any form of sort of mechanics whereby he was simply born with a certain nature or whatever, although he was born with our nature, but by his own free will identity with us. And so it was because of that that he could cry at the very end of his life, "My God, why have you or how have you forsaken me?" Well, God doesn't forsake the righteous, but he does forsake the wicked. I suggest that Jesus got to that total point of identity with sinful people that he even felt as if he was dying the death of a sinner, although he was not. In that sense, it came true that the sins and transgressions of all of us were laid upon him in his death. And in a far smaller way, we, like Isaiah, are to have this sense of passionate identity with sinners and that desire to save them, that desire to give them the way beyond how they are, and above all, the hope of life eternal.